You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and today we're talking about a public health crisis that has affected my own family and so many others across the state, across the country, everywhere. It's Alzheimer's disease. And the statistics are truly shocking. Every 65 seconds, somebody in the United States develops Alzheimer's disease. Here in Wisconsin, 111,000 people over age 65 are living with Alzheimer's. And that means that twice as many family caregivers are supporting them to the tune of, and I can't even believe this number is real, but nearly $6 billion in unpaid care. $6 billion worth of care that is keeping people out of the workforce, that is costing people time and money and energy. And that doesn't even take into account the $1 billion annually that costs our state Medicaid system. That's likely to go up in light of recent changes with the federal government and the cost of healthcare. But most importantly, behind those statistics are millions of families navigating one of life's most challenging journeys. So today we are bringing together a couple of voices from different corners of the Alzheimer's community to share insights and hope and practical guidance. I'm joined today by Wendy Bettley, Senior Director of Programs for the Alzheimer's Association's Wisconsin chapter, and Dr. Dave Ferguson, a life care planning specialist who helps families prepare for the road ahead. So whether you're personally affected by Alzheimer's or you're supporting somebody who is, or you're curious, you just want to understand this disease that touches so many lives. Odds are you know somebody who's been affected by this. So this conversation is for all of us. Wendy, Dr. Dave.
Thanks, Kristen. Thanks.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, thanks for making the trip.
Yeah, no problem.
So why don't we start by just defining Alzheimer's disease? Because I think that for a lot of people, they think about memory loss and they hear the word dementia and they think that everything is Alzheimer's, but that's not the case, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not the case. So Alzheimer's is just a type of dementia. There are many different types of dementia out there. And dementia is not really a diagnosis. So a lot of us hear, oh, I have dementia, but what type of dementia do you have? It's kind of like flowers. Uh-huh. What kind of flowers do you have in your flower bed? You know, it's just the different varieties. And Alzheimer's disease is the most common type of dementia, and basically it impacts the person's ability for memory loss, cognitive ability to being able to process information correctly. So it's more than just memory that gets impacted by Alzheimer's disease, but we don't have a cure yet for this, and we're getting there. We've got mm-hmm. treatments now, but no cure yet.
Yeah.
Kristen, I think the memory piece is what people think about right away, but as Wendy was saying, it's behaviors, you know, judgment. There's so many parts of cognition or thinking that are affected besides memory, and mm-hmm. those are the things that oftentimes people don't focus on or aren't thinking about.
So. Right, but it's important to have the right diagnosis, and I think that before we get to that piece, a lot of people feel as we age that we can't remember where we put our keys or what was that person's name. And it's not unusual to have some cognitive decline as you age.
Yeah, that's why I have in my shop, I'll put the ruler where I'm working and then there'll be another ruler somewhere else because I can never remember where I have it. Or yes. I'll find the pencil behind my ear sometimes.
Where are my glasses? Like, where are my glasses?
So
they're on the top of your head.
Some of those things do happen. But it's much more involved than that. But I think the point that you made, it's really important to have a diagnosis because there are some things that interfere with our ability to always come back to cognition, that really complicated things that has so many different elements to it. But there are some reversible things that need to be excluded so that those things could be potentially addressed. And I think that's oftentimes it just gets it's scary, and so people can avoid it or avoid those conversations. They avoid going in and having there are some screening tools that can be used early to at least get a baseline to see what happens.
I'm so glad you mentioned that it's scary, because it is.
It is.
When you feel like something like this is happening to you, it's really easy in a way to just try to pretend that it's not happening. But it's so important to have it evaluated, because there are treatable forms of dementia that are not Alzheimer's.
Yeah, they're treatable forms of cognitive impairment that that can be evaluated, and so that's so there's some things that can be done. But it's not just for Alzheimer's that's scary. You probably saw this too in your in your practice, that healthcare issues in general can be scary if you don't know what's going on, and that can relay in. That can result in a delay in diagnosis, and then ultimately for Alzheimer's or any other type of dementia, a delay in planning.
Right.
A delay in again, we'll probably talk about it, but putting your team together, really.
Yeah, and that's why we have these conversations, because a lot of people don't have access to healthcare. A lot of people don't have the dollars to go in and get their concerns evaluated. So they turn to social media and TikTok. And we want to make sure that, you know, we're having real conversations about real things so that people have good information that they can base their healthcare decisions on.
Yeah, so it starts with those expressing those concerns and having that real, and again, that's why having that primary care provider relationship is so important, so you can talk about those things early. And that's true across all healthcare, not just for, we're talking about dementia today, but
You're talking to a gynecologist, so yes.
So, but that's oftentimes too. So I mean, so those delays of concerns about bringing up something which is life altering is
scary.
Difficult.
Really scary. I remember when I started medical school back in 2003, there was just a new medicine that was coming out that slowed the progression of Alzheimer's. And that was a total breakthrough. That was the first thing that we had that really made a difference medically. But since then, there have been a number of developments. There are a lot of medicines that are out there.
I think the last time I looked, I think there are 100 and there's over 100 different drugs in various stages of trials
research.
And research. And so we're really seeing this kind of explosion in the last couple of years. And so I teach at MCW Green Bay here in town, and I was talking to students about when I graduated from medical school, Alzheimer's wasn't in the top 10 cause of death. And now it's what?
The sixth?
Sixth now?
Sixth leading cause.
Cause. So it has, everything's changing about it. You know, it's, and the treatment is exciting, because there are going to be some additional options. There are options now for folks. But again, that comes back, you can talk about this too, Wendy. Yeah. It's early recognition. It's not the later stages of Alzheimer's that they're effective. So.
Right. So, you know, I've been in the field for over 30 years now, and it's always different, right? You're learning things as you go on. And they, when we first started, we had, you know, those are medications that help treat the symptoms of the disease, but it didn't really stop it or slow it down enough. And now we have new medications out there that are slowing it down. I've actually gotten to speak to a couple people, and they've seen how it's kind of stopped the progression at this point. And they're really new into the treatment. They're like a year into their treatment, and so that's really exciting. But we just, you know, that early detection is really important, because these new treatments are only good for people in the early, very early stages of the disease process. So, you know, you were talking about how people are afraid to go to their doctor and talk to their doctor about these symptoms that they're having. Now it's more imperative, because the sooner you have the conversation, and if you do unfortunately have the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, it then allows, you know, and you get that diagnosis, then it allows you to go into these treatments earlier, so you can actually stop or at least slow the progression of the disease down, which is giving you more time with your family. As Dave said, we have a lot down the pike for under research, and so there's going to be something there that's going to stop it as well. So,
and that, I mean, there are barriers to the current treatments. I mean, it's you know, you have to be in a center that's delivering the treatments, and they're there are risks with those drugs, their infusions, right? But mm-hmm. the movement is towards a way, infusions, they have to be given by IV, I should say, mm-hmm. right? So, but the movement mm-hmm. is to way, you know, towards to forms that you could take as a pill, mm-hmm. right? So we've seen that in other areas of medicine, right? So as we understand more about the drugs and the treatments, we move to something that will be easier to administer and open up access to people that otherwise wouldn't be able to get to a center.
That's an important point, that medicine is always changing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're always, the more information we have, the more people who are using these medicines and experiencing the outcomes of these medicines, the more we can tailor them mm-hmm. to the needs of our populations. So I think sometimes people think that this is medicine, like this is what it is. But the truth is, it can change from year to year. Well, and this is an area where things are really evolving quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it isn't. Yeah, you think it's fixed, but it's not at all. Yeah. I mean, it's constantly evolving and changing. And this right now, we seems to be in this area which's moving rapidly.
Very fast. It's hopeful. I mean, like mm-hmm. I said, you know, when we've been in this field for such a long time and we see the, you know, take two steps forward, one step back in our research. But now we're actually, we have things on the market available. It gives hope to people that we're getting closer, that people don't have to live with this. I mean, I've been touched by Alzheimer's disease. It's not fun to see someone go through that. And, you know, we see individuals who are in early diagnosis, you know, a long time, I mean, just a few years ago, people are like, why should I get diagnosed? There's no treatments out there. Mm-hmm. And we even have physicians who would say that too. Well, why? Why even diagnose them if there's nothing there? But now there is. So it's a little more hopeful. It's given that back to them.
And that's where the planning piece of it, the mm-hmm. you know, the treatment's important and that's going to evolve and that's going to open up for folks. But the planning piece of that, anticipating what's coming down the road for people, so you can again assemble your team, so that you can stay at home as long as possible if that's your goal. Right?
I'm really excited to talk about that later in the show. Yeah, because that is really that's the piece mm-hmm. that changes your life.
Because you still need support. Yeah, I think even under treatment, you're going to still need potentially some support, and you have to plan for what's getting those advanced care planning documents in place, mm-hmm. though all those things still need to happen mm-hmm. Despite what's going on the treatment front and the diagnosis front.
Right. Hey, I have some serious concerns that we're hearing about all of these great things that are happening with research and here at the UW, I mean, in Madison, they're making incredible strides, but we also know that there have been major cuts to federal funding. And that does affect our ability to continue with some of the research that directly affects the future of Alzheimer's treatment. I'm sure this is something that you've been thinking about and dealing with. What do you think the impact is on the ground for the people that you serve?
That's a great question. I think it's still pretty much an unknown of what the impact is going to be on the federal level, but the Alzheimer's Association is actually the largest nonprofit funder of research in the world.
Wow.
So we provide a lot of money towards research. So it's not all federally funded, but it will have an impact.
Mm-hmm. It's great to know that those private dollars are coming in.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that we're here today, because the Green Bay Walk to Cure Alzheimer's is coming up on September 27th. We're going to talk about that more and how you all can get involved. But right now we need to take a short break. So this is Dr. Kristen Lyerly. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. And I am here today with Dr. Dave Ferguson and Wendy Bentley. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease. Come on back. We'll see you soon.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and we are talking about Alzheimer's disease with Dr. Dave Ferguson. He is the owner of DJ Ferguson and Associates Life Care Planning. And Wendy Bettley, she's the Senior Program Director for the Wisconsin Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. By the way, we've got a big walk coming up in Green Bay on September 27th. We're going to give you all the information about how to get involved in that. That's a huge fundraiser for the organization. And of course, it raises awareness as well. But before we get to that, I love music, as you know. And this is kind of cool. I picked this week an album that the Alzheimer's Association put together. It's called Music Moments. And it's all of these famous stars, like that was Joan Jett that we were listening to, who did Hard to Grow Up. And they all pitched in. They've all been touched in one way or another by Alzheimer's. And there's such a cool connection between music and people who are living with Alzheimer's. And so they put out this cool album and they've raised a whole bunch of money, which is very important because that's how we fund a lot of the support and the research and the things that are helping our families and our patients living with Alzheimer's. But can we talk a little bit about music and how, in my experience with my former mother-in-law, who was suffering from Alzheimer's, she would sing these songs. She didn't know who her son was, but she would sing these songs from back in the day. And we were always so curious about how she remembered the songs, but she didn't remember the people. Right. It's such an unusual behavior, but actually it's not for people living with Alzheimer's.
No, actually it's music is almost a gift in many ways, especially for family members. I had the honor of, you know, being part of memory cafes across the state of Wisconsin, and music was a big component. And we would have some individuals who really couldn't even speak, but they would just participate by, you know, just being present.
Mm-hmm.
We'd start playing music, and after a while, they light up. You know, they start to smile, they start to sing, and then just it almost releases something within the brain, and they start connecting more with what's happening around them. It's amazing. There's a program called Alive Inside, and you can just Google Alive Inside, and it'll show video clips of individuals having music introduced to them. And it's amazing. It's great to reduce stress, right? Because when I listen to music, I listen to what my mood is, you know?
Right, yes.
If I'm like, all right, I'm going to get them kind of mood, I'm going to listen to something a little bit more aggressive, right? If I want to be more mellow, I'm going to listen to more mellow music, right? Just to get me into the swings. If I'm cleaning my house, I'm listening to 80s music, you know, that sort of thing.
You're my kind of gal, Wendy.
Right? You know, and I'm in there. But that's what music does for everybody. And it's a connection to, it's a connector to the person who's living with Alzheimer's disease, to their caregiver as well. Even if we may not recognize who they are, we still have that sense of who that person is that's with us. And so, but that just is another connector there because it drives memory.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of remember if we listen to this song, maybe we had it in high school, pops up a high school memory maybe, you know, so there's a lot behind that.
Yeah, so that part isn't, I guess, too surprising because that's what happens. I mean, that's what happens to me. I hear a song and it takes me back to either studying at my desk or it takes you back to, it's one of those long-term memories.
Or eating pudding pops in the middle school cafeteria because that was so fun. There's Starship, I think is by Starship. There's this one song and I'm like,
nothing's going to stop us now.
Yeah. I got to eat a pudding pop, but they don't make those anymore.
I was thinking more along the lines of Pink Floyd and when the wall came out. The emotional parts there too. I heard a song. I grew up listening to Glenn Miller, and my dad was a big band, Frank Sinatra. But I heard a song the other day, and immediately I thought of my parents would often dance in the living room. My brothers would be sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
And it just took me right back to sitting on the couch with my brothers, watching my parents, listening to that song.
Wow.
So that's what music can do for you. There's a gentleman that I've known for a number of years now. I'm one of the dementia care specialists that comes in and sings with them together. It's a thing that they can do together that's really enjoyable and still remembers the words. And
music therapy is wonderful.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It really taps into a whole other emotional realm. And it works because it uses, music affects you in a different part of your brain than the memory and the language.
And that's right. And then that emotional piece, that's oftentimes, so the memory piece and some of those things you may not remember, again, somebody may not remember what they have for breakfast, but the emotional piece, how you present yourself to them, they can still read the tone of your voice. They can still read the emotional piece. Mm-hmm. So that's an important part to recognize, that the emotional part is still often preserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we often think when we do gatherings or events with people, people always like, oh, we got to have something concrete to walk away with. And it's not really what it's like with somebody with memory loss. It's more of the emotional impact that they walk away with, more so than the actual, like if you're making pottery, I don't know, I'm just throwing something out there. You know, you're not going to walk away with that.
Right.
But it's the moments. It's the emotional impact from that moment that they carry on outside. And then they'll remember that. They may not know what happened during that event that they were at, but they'll remember how they felt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why singing together or listening to music together is can be so important.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can be so important early in life.
Yeah.
Before something like this hits, so that you've got that memory bank to be able to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And it really emphasizes that sense of community and togetherness that I think a lot of us are lacking now and have been really struggling to reclaim since COVID. Mm-hmm. Maybe even before. Yeah. All right. Well, we need to take one more break here. Actually, we're going to take another break later in the show. But when we come back from this one, let's dig into all of the support and planning, the financial piece. Like, there's so much more to talk about. It's not just the disease. It's how it affects your family and everything else. Mm-hmm. All right. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley. That's Sting singing Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Yeah, as part of the Music Moments album that benefits the Alzheimer's Association. Really beautiful music from a number of different artists. Hey, I'm here. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease, how it affects families, how you can plan, all the support around it. I've got Dr. Dave Ferguson, who is the owner of DJ Ferguson and Associates Life Care Planning, as well as Wendy Bentley, the Senior Program Director for the Wisconsin Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. We are not only promoting the Green Bay Walk to end all the Green Bay Walks Forward in the Fight Against Alzheimer's, which is on September 27th. But there are walks all over northeastern Wisconsin, actually all over the country. All you have to do is go to the website and punch in it's alz.org, and punch in your zip code, and it'll bring up the closest walk for you. Lots of walks coming up in September, again, all over the country. And hey, if you missed the beginning of our conversation, because it's a really good one, you can always find us wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Substack, in all the places. And you can always find me here streaming on the Civic Media app and on WISS and WGBW. So let's get into the meat of this, Dave. Alzheimer's it's a medical condition. It's scary and it's hard, but there are things that we can do. And one of the most important things that we can do is plan our lives, plan our support, plan the financial piece of it. And that's your area of expertise.
Yes.
Well,
I have to say, I had to think about the expert. I'm not sure about the expertise piece, because I messed up the other day and you make mistakes. And I think I was thinking about on my way in, in having conversations with individuals with Alzheimer's, you know, the biggest thing is getting, like, I think I make my mistakes when I have a task to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have things to do, and that doesn't always work, right? That's not, you know, you can't have an agenda, and it may the situation may change and it might work 30 minutes from now. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to operate on a different plane when you're working with individuals who have dementia. It just isn't, you have to get out of yourself and be aware of what, how things are going and what's going on.
I think I hear you saying that you have to have different expectations.
You don't. I mean, we can be so task oriented. That's one of the things I see. Whether it's in the clinic, you know, I was in a doctor's appointment with an individual, and the medical assistant who came in and immediately signed into the computer, and they started asking all the questions, right? And they weren't getting answers from the patient right away, so they just started speaking louder. And I had just had to, interrupt and say, it's not a hearing problem, right? It's not a hearing issue. And so drawing your attention away from those tasks-focused things that you're doing, making eye contact, making connections with the person, and then kind of breaking that piece was what was necessary.
The emotional connection, making that emotional connection instead of just checking off the boxes.
It's that emotional connection, being aware of how somebody is before you jump into those task things. So, so I think the part about the planning piece is just getting to, you know, to learn that and practice it. And you have to, and you mess up and you have to apologize and you have to go back and try something else. It requires kind of being creative and not thinking always about the thing that you have to necessarily get done. It's working on operating in the plane that they're living in isn't yours. Isn't the same.
Right.
And so that's the big challenge. And the sooner that family members and care partners recognize that and start to practice and learn ways to better communicate, the much better they'll be.
That can be so hard.
Oh, it's, it is. I mean, I've been doing this now 8 years. I think I've made that transition out of clinical practice. And I think that is the biggest thing that I come away with is that it's not, it takes, It is hard. It is hard.
And it takes time.
It takes
time. It's like you just have to create that space to let it happen instead of going straight for the task.
Right. And then is it really a big deal if the kitchen isn't as clean as it used to be? You know, is it really a big deal does it matter if that bill is paid 2-3 days late? You know, I mean, we get worked up into, again, operating in the ways that we're normally and expecting to operate, and it just doesn't, it can't, it, it's not going to work that way. You're going to be unhappy, you're going to get burned out. And we've talked about that, Wendy, right? Care partners, the burnout risk is incredibly high, and so you have to protect, the care partners have to protect their own health, and the best way to do that is to have support around you, but also to be change the way you're communicating, change the way you're approaching the situations.
I want to just repeat something that you just said because I think it's very, very important. You've got the person who is living with Alzheimer's at the center of it, but you've got a group of, hopefully a group of care providers around that person who also need to be supported and protected and have resources and be able to take care of themselves. Wendy, I see you nodding your head.
Yeah, and we actually have to make the caregivers the number one priority and not the person living with. Not that we're trying to diminish that, but the stress on caregiving, it builds up slowly over time. Mm-hmm. And we don't always know that we've got more on our shoulders than we did, you know, a year or 2 years prior. And so there's a statistic that 70% of spousal caregivers who are 70 years and older die before the person they're taking care of.
Really? 70%. So more of the caregivers die before the person who's living with Alzheimer's.
And that's because we're not taking care of ourselves as a caregiver. So we're so focused on making sure that the person with the memory loss has all their cares met, right? On many levels, emotional, physical, you know, that gets hard when you're, the physical aspect alone is challenging, right? I mean, I work with a lot of families where the wife is taking care of her husband. Her husband is 6'5", 300 pounds, and she's 5'5", and 120 pounds. So that alone is a lot to deal with too, but there's just so much. We end up taking so much on ourselves, you know, managing the household, everything. So having that care team around you is imperative. To have that care for that person with, just so that the primary caregiver can have a break, is essential. The hardest thing though is ask for help. I think that's one thing. I when we work with families, it's like, oh, I don't need that yet, or I don't need that yet. And it isn't until they become sick then the family has to come in and jump in and try to figure out if they have family around them.
Yeah.
I always come back to Governor Schreiber, who is a great supporter, and his wife Elaine, who lived with Alzheimer's. He has My Two Elaines is a great book. He talks about how not getting help early was a strain on him because of the delayed doctor's appointment, his own health, and how important it is to get that kind of support earlier.
So we talk about getting help early. When do you initiate all of this stuff? You get the diagnosis, and then where do you go from there?
Well, I think that's a great question, Kristen. We've been talking about, I mean, to me, the standard of care when you make the diagnosis, that those patients should be referred to the Alzheimer's Association is a great place to go for that initial referral. And in some places, I mean, we've been trying to talk about getting that referral built into the healthcare system. There are care
consultations. Wendy
does care consultations to talk specifically about what we can do to manage perhaps difficult behaviors. There are support groups through the Alzheimer's Association. There are a number of, Wendy, you could go through this better than I can, but there are, I've attended a couple of the education pieces that are put together. There's one, a great one on communication. How do you change the way you communicate with people to be more effective? So again, education, support groups, care consultations, there's all sorts of things that people can do to start getting ready for some of the care responsibilities they're going to have.
What does a care consultation encompass?
It's really, I love doing care consultations because it's really just listening to their story, kind of seeing where they're at, what they're dealing with, what they consider a struggle. Because, you know, getting up and down from a dinner table multiple times during dinner might be a frustration point to some people, but not another person.
Uh-huh.
So just having those type of conversations and just kind of meeting them where they're at. So it's really just kind of saying, okay, do they have their legal finances taken care of? Do they eat healthy? Do they socialize? Those are some of the conversations that we start to do. But a lot of it is just providing support, emotional support. We don't have, you know, a manual with this. Everyone's different.
Right.
There's not one person that's the same when they're living with Alzheimer's disease. You know, everyone has a different lifestyle. So it's their life story. So it's, you know, just trying to figure that out with families, just trying to see where they're at, what they need, what do they already have in place, and what their biggest worry is. That's really what it is. It's just having that conversation. So care consultations really kind of give them a sense of, okay, we have another support person. You ask the question, what is the first thing they should do, right? Besides calling our 800 number at the Alzheimer's Association, I think it's really just having those conversations with family and listening to the doctor. I wish that they would send people to dietitians right afterwards, like they do with people who have diabetes. They should do that also for people with Alzheimer's disease.
Why?
Because the way someone, this is part of the risk factors that, you know, risk factors of developing Alzheimer's disease is not eating healthy and so forth. But they also find that when individuals who do have memory loss, eating healthy is so important. The way we take care of heart is the way we take care of our brain. Exercise. It's unbelievable. They've done studies on exercise where individuals will do 20 minutes worth of exercise in the morning, whatever they're capable of. If they can do it in a chair, they do it in a chair. If they can walk, if they can lift weights, you know, they say that's actually the best. It just gets them going. It gets that oxygen flowing. It gets them connected to the day better. It actually supports them. The best medicine, though, at this point, besides the pill form and the infusions that we've talked about, is the socialization. And I think you've hit on it when we're talking about, you know, COVID. We saw a huge increase in deaths within Alzheimer's patients.
Because they were isolated. Oh, sure.
And so a lot of times, you know, when we're thinking, oh, I have memory loss issues, whatever. But if you're stuck in a home 24 hours a day, seven days a week, you're not going out, you're not using your brain. If you don't use it, you lose it type. You have to exercise that. And that's the best type of exercise is socialization. So.
Yes, well, Wendy, I'm a big proponent too of looking at those. Wendy mentioned just to look, making sure that the advanced care planning documents, the healthcare power of attorney, has been updated.
Yes, all of the legal stuff.
The durable, the power of attorney for finances, that those are in place, so that you're not scrambling to try to put that together. All of a sudden, somebody hits the emergency room and there's
nothing there,
power of
right.
attorney, and so now the family's potentially looking at guardianship. So yeah, you want to get those things taken care of.
And do you have to hire an attorney to do that?
No.
Or?
The Aging Disability Resource Center is a great place to start. You know, it may be worth looking, talking to an attorney, because there could be more involved in the whole estate and how you're going to handle some of those things. But those forms can be downloaded also from the state site.
Fantastic. Yeah. Okay, more to talk about. Our last segment's coming up. All right, this is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
Just sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Looks like nothing gonna change.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I worked down at Ashbury Hills. Minimum wage, but it pays the bills. Cleaning floors.
Leading Dr. Kristen Lierley, and you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. We are talking about Alzheimer's disease and all the cool stuff that's out there to support not just the patient, but the families, especially the families who are living with Alzheimer's. I just want to mention that the Alzheimer's Walk is coming up in Green Bay on September 27th. To find out more about that, you can go to helpmeoutalz.org. Mm-hmm. Yep, plug in your zip code. It will give you the information about not only the Green Bay Walk, but there are lots of other walks on different days in Manitowoc and Sturgeon Bay and Oshkosh and Appleton and literally all over the country.
We have 27 of them in the state.
But
they do happen all over the country.
Yeah. And these are really important, not only for raising awareness, but also for raising funds that then go to support people who are living with Alzheimer's and the caregivers who help to take care of them.
Yeah, because all of our, just so you know, all of our services, we don't charge families for. So all of our support groups, our education programs, care consultations are at no cost to families. And that's the way we want to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the funds go to care and support, but also to research as
Amazing.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we need that now more than ever.
We sure do.
Yeah. Dave, you are a real proponent of brain health and how you can optimize your brain health through physical health. Talk a little bit about prevention and that.
Well, I think that's why the walk to me is a great thing. I mean, it's great to get out and be physically active.
Mm-hmm. With people you love.
With people you love.
In a social environment.
Yep. It brings in a lot of those things together. And so, yeah, I think we talk, you know, the focus again is on those who have Alzheimer's and the care partners. But as Wendy was saying, exercise, you know, what's good for the heart is good for the brain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, staying active, and if you can do it in a social setting, that's even better. But making sure that that part of it for the care partners is so important. A number of years ago, I was helping out at one of the Y's in the Parkinson's exercise class, and I just saw it was just amazing. It's a different, you know, different disease process. They can have some cognitive issues as well. But just to see the transformation, and somebody comes in and it was having difficulty walking for a couple of minutes on a treadmill. After a couple of months, they're up to 20 minutes or so having, you know, conversations. And just to see what it does to the mental part of the living with that disease is amazing. And that's when I think the light bulb kind of went off in my head about how big of a connection that is to stay active and be able to. And I've helped some individuals at home with some home exercise, and making that a regular routine part of their life is important.
I could see people pushing back on that and saying, I'm 70 years old. I can barely get out of my chair. What do you expect me to do?
Well, I had to stop and think about that because my mom was up one summer. She lives in Texas. I'm from Texas originally. She came up and she was working in my pulling weeds in my garden when she broke her arm, which she never. She always reminded me that's how she broke her arms because of the weeds in my garden, right? But my mom had never. She had never had a. Once she recovered, it was exercise that got her back to being independent. And I found a trainer who happened to be a nurse, and my mom had never really stepped into the gym, but here she's doing leg presses and lat pull downs and stuff. And it was exercise and strength training particularly that helped her get back to her functioning before she had a pretty significant, you know, break. So I don't think it's under the right settings. I think that's why we have fantastic Ys in Green Bay, Door County, and all over mm-hmm. the state, really. Oshkosh, I mean, there's great Ys that can really help individuals. They can get trainers. I often, when I was talking in groups, I was asking people, you know, how many of you have financial advisors? And almost everybody raises their hand. I ask, how many have trainers? Maybe one or two, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So finding a professional that can help them is a fantastic way to.
People worry about that, though. I mean, you think trainers, like, oh my gosh, they're going to have me out there for 2 hours. They're going to make me throw up.
I worry about that. Yeah.
That's not how it is.
No, it's not boot camp. No, it's appropriate. It's appropriate exercise from where you're starting, right? And that could be walking literally 2 minutes on a treadmill, which is what I would do, right? You start from the beginning.
Start somewhere.
And that's a good thing to do. It's not, I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of by doing 1 minute or 2 minutes. I think that's what holds a lot of people back is how are they going to look in other people's eyes if they're only doing 2 minutes on this, or if they're only lifting 5 pounds or 2 pounds. But it's just getting started, like you said. I think it's just when you say go, you have to do exercise, people are like, oh my gosh, you want me to go run for a mile? That's not how it is. It's just getting up and moving, because once you stop moving, it's harder to continue to move. So just those little bits help.
Yeah, it's that sedentary piece mm-hmm. that's really bad. And I think we should probably mention the Brain Center in Green Bay too. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic organization, which is really focuses on all the pillars around brain health. So there are a number of community organizations that are really focused and working on that. So.
Hey, and I love that you use the word community, because that is really what I try to ground this show in, is bringing people together, building each other up, investing in each other, because it feels like the world is trying to divide us and isolate us. And with COVID and with aging and with healthcare problems, there's just been so much of that. So yes, leaning more into those community resources.
Right.
Yes. In our final minute that we have, Wendy, what do you want to leave our listeners with?
Oh my gosh.
There's so much.
There is. I'm actually going to do an ask. Yeah. One is to help, you know, participate in one of the walks. Just sign up. Join us that day. It really is a great time. It's really great to see a sea of purple out there. And knowing that we're not alone. You're not alone in this disease. There's a lot of support. The other one is we need volunteers to help us be community educators, support group facilitators, help us the day of the walk. So if you're curious in how you can help us, that's the number one way, is through volunteering to help raise awareness.
Walk, volunteer. What else, Dave?
Talk to your primary care provider.
Yep. Yes.
If you have concerns.
That's great advice. Thank you both for joining me this morning. Dr. Dave Ferguson, owner of DJ Ferguson and Associates Life Care Planning. Wendy Bettley, Senior Program Director for the Wisconsin Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Let's walk to cure, to support, to just
end Alzheimer's.
Yes, to end Alzheimer's, September 27th here in Green Bay. This is Kristen Lyerly. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you next time.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.